MMA Roadshow with John Morgan, episode number 5. We are cruising right along with these. And once again, I'm not on the road. This is the worst roadshow ever, man. At least this time, I've got my buddy Cole Coffee with me. We are sitting right where I always sit when I'm in Las Vegas to record this, and that is on the patio at Buffalo Wild Wings at Warm Springs and Durango, where they treat me like a king.
They treat you good. You know, I have to admit, you know, and I love the BW Buffalo Wild Wings. You know, back home, we call them BW3s. You know, where I believe it is from Columbus, Ohio, where it was called Buffalo
Correct.
Wild Wings and Weck. So they shorten it to BW3s, and then, you know, we call it B-dubs for short. I don't know if that's what most people outside of that calls it, because you still say B-dubs, right?
It's
still Buffalo Wild Wings, you know. Nobody knows what the Weck is. You know, the Weck, I believe, was a sandwich.
That's right. It's a type of bread that they serve.
Yeah, type of bread and stuff. So, there's a little bit of history.
Well,
Cole this Coffee's, is not a bad location.
No, this is not a bad location at all. We've got the frosty beverages here in hand, which is the way to do this. And I promise you, stick with me. Next week, the MMA Roadshow will be in Australia. The week after that, we'll be in the Philippines. Then we'll be back here in Vegas for UFC 187. And then to close May out, we'll be in Brazil. So we'll be getting some air miles.
Yeah, I think you make up for it. I think that makes up for the lack of road time.
So let's talk real quick before we kind of go into what we're talking about this week. And just to let you know, Diego Sanchez is a guest this week. Burt Watson is a guest this week. Normally, we like to travel and talk to these people in person. I was on vacation. I was in Disneyland the last couple of days, and so I didn't really have time to arrange all the bookings. And if I had, my wife would have killed me. So what we did was we did a couple phone interviews with these guys. And so cut me some slack. I had to spend some time in Disneyland. But I think we got some good interviews nonetheless.
I think the interviews are great. And you're right. Your wife would have been maybe a little castration in there if you would have cut short Disney for, honey, I got to go home and talk to Burt Watson. Yeah, probably not going to work.
Well, let's talk about the news at hand, first of all. If I want to get your take on it. John Jones has been stealing all the headlines. We ended up talking to Burt Watson a little bit about this. But, you know, your take on what's been done with John Jones. Stripped of his belt, no longer fighting UFC 187, suspended indefinitely. What do you think, man? The right call?
You know, I do think it was the right call. You know, and I like John. I like a lot of those guys. And I think anytime, you know, something like this has to happen, it has to be, you know, it has to be meritable. It has to be worth the punishment for what he did. And, you know, there's a lot of what ifs, but the fact that if it could have went a lot worse, if this pregnant woman was hurt or injured and he chose to leave and then come back and say grab cash or whatever, I'm not sure if that was speculation or whatever, you know, no one was really there. I think that just poorly reflected upon him as a human being and let alone as the sport and whatnot. You know, last time we want, I think you're battling people that are looking to say, oh, these are just barbarians, these are just fighters, they're just mindless brutes. You know, I think most of the guys have went out of their way to prove that that's not the case. And then when you have a situation like this and a guy does that, you know, he's not helping the sport any. He's not helping his brand. And I mean, especially the guy that, you know, he's been slapped on the wrist before, you know. I mean, I I'm not saying that I don't feel bad for the guy. I think he's going through some issues and stuff needs to be worked out. You know, to lose the Nike deal and then, you know, go and now he's lost Reebok and, you know, he's stripped from his title and he's, you know, he's facing a lot of things, you know. You know, I do think it was just for the sport. You know, do I think that maybe, you know, if it was a criminal case, because he's still going to face the punishment for that, you know, but I think you do have to keep it separate. You can't say, oh, well, he's going to lose all this and say we don't need to punish him because he's going to get it outside. You know,
right.
You still need to stand up for the sport, stand up for what they're doing, and you know, give out their own punishment, you know. It's unfortunate because, I mean, he is such a superstar in the sport and he's such a fantastic fighter, you know, but I'm confident that he'll get his shit together. You know, I think ultimately you have to lose everything to probably realize what you have, and I don't think he's ever been really faced with that before, and I think now hopefully this will be the trick to kind of get him back on track. And I mean, the skills aren't going to go away,
right?
You know, I mean, I think he could probably step away for 6 months to a fucking year and come back and still be absolutely dominating and incredible, but in the meantime what he did was terrible for the sport. And I know I'm rambling along about it, but it was a, you know, he could have done some real damage if they didn't do anything.
Right.
I think that would have really damaged the credibility of the sport and for the UFC.
I agree. I think it was really the only thing that the UFC could do. I think they had to do the suspension. And you do got to say, you know, you feel bad for John and feel bad for what he's going through. I mean, he's made some poor decisions. There's no getting around that. So it's not like he has anybody to blame for it. But you just hate seeing people going through it. John, it's funny because, you know, he gets a lot of hate and a lot of people don't like him as a person. I've actually always had a great relationship with him. It's really funny. Before his UFC debut, it's only happened to me twice ever, but I did a phone interview with him, and when I went to transfer my recording, my file basically to my computer, it corrupted. And it corrupted both the source file and on the computer, so I lost the entire interview. And, you know, he hadn't even debuted in the UFC yet, but I had been told, like, hey, man, this guy's somebody you need to watch. And I watched some of his regional tapes, and it's like, okay, wow, there is something to this kid. So I had to call him back, and I'm like, so here's something pretty stupid.
Ouch.
I lost the entire interview. You know, could we do it again? And he was like, absolutely, man, no problem. Let's do it again, you know. And so we did the whole interview again. And actually, wow. I think it was probably a little bit better interview the second time because now I had the idea of what I learned in the first to kind of follow up on. And, you know, so that kind of set the tone for an interesting relationship for us. And then he's always been good to me. I mean, there was I remember a time when, you know, as he was kind of starting his rise up the ranks, there was a moment where he did an open workout at the MGM, and I didn't quite get an opportunity to ask everything I wanted to ask because it got cut short. And Malky and John, Malky Kawa, I mean, his manager, they saw me, and they basically snuck me past the security guards and pulled me into a locker room so I could finish up the interview and get the quotes I wanted and get everything I needed. So the guy has always gone out of his way to be nice to me. And so certainly I don't have that sense of hate that I guess some people do towards him, and I hope things get better. But
yeah,
you know,
I think
you're right about the suspension. It was really the only thing the USC could
do. And again, I'm in the same boat with you. I have no ill feelings for him, no hate for him by any means. You know, I think it was for – the better of the sport. You know, unfortunately, you can't let that not go. And I think he'll realize that as well and take his punishment in stride and realize that if he didn't get it, it would have been bad for the sport, bad for the brand, and in a sense, bad for himself because, you know, I truly think that he's going to learn something from it. I believe in it, and he's going to come back bigger and better and badder and, you know, hopefully have that sense of, you know, what's going on. And actually, this just made me think of something, and I don't know if I'm elaborating too long on it, but does the UFC clear themselves of now having to do any sort of testing? You know, because maybe the going into court or whatever, they might test them. You know, supposedly, whether the rumors and speculation of what they found in the car, whether they found remains of something, or whether they found a marijuana pipe, things of that sort. Now that he's suspended and immediately kind of been stripped, we don't have to test them. There's no testing or anything that needed. And if it's within the legal rights, we're not going to find that stuff out either.
True.
You know, so we'll never really fully know unless it's released within them what was really happening. At this point, it's just hit and run. So in that case, you know, when it comes to the facts and what you can see, we don't know what he was on. You know, it could have just purely been a hit and run. I mean, he didn't help himself by running and having things in the car. But in the same sense, I don't think we'll ever really fully know because now they're not obligated to test and share.
Yeah, you're right. No, you're absolutely right about that. But let's move past John Jones. I don't want to spend too terribly much time breaking that down. Obviously, I think every headline of the week has been all about John Jones, and rightfully so, biggest superstar in the sport. But I think we all hope he gets better and comes back to fighting. In the meantime,
get better, Jones.
In the meantime, Anthony Johnson going to be fighting Daniel Cormier.
Wow.
Anthony Johnson seems to be adjusting very well. Just spoke to him briefly today, and you know, he seems to be making the adjustment well. And I think that 187 card is still a loaded card. He's still got two title fights. Still a good card. So, well, let's talk. I didn't get to do any traveling this week. You didn't do any traveling this week, but you did. You did do the Ultimate Fighter tryouts.
I did. I did.
You
were
there.
That was like road show. I did hop on the road from my house, which is right around the corner from the Palace Station, to the Palace Station to watch the tough tryouts.
You literally are like. I mean, in a car, it probably takes you 15 seconds?
Yeah, like maybe 2 minutes. You know, I got to stop at the stop sign, and then there's a school zone you have to go through, which, you know, you dial it down a little bit. But, yeah, I could walk. I probably should walk, especially since we do podcasts here. Now at B-dubs with beer and food, you know, I should probably get as much walking in as I can.
Well, but to those that haven't covered the Ultimate Fighter Trials, I would have been there, obviously, except I was in Disneyland with my wife and son, enjoying a couple of days off. Ultimate Fighter tryouts are a routine by now. They do them the same way every time. You come in, you pre-register, you sit around and wait for a long time. You take your picture, you give your biographical information, then you go in, you do your grappling. After you do your grappling, you know, a few are selected to hit mitts. And then after the mitts, a few are selected to go on to interviews. Now, as reporters, we're not allowed to report on anything other than who is there, how many people are there, and that's it, because we're not even allowed to say who made it past grappling or anything like that. Yeah. We have to sign an agreement that says if we're going to cover it. So it's kind of a routine thing, but you did a great job of putting together a highlight video and talking to some of the fighters that have gone through it in the past. But I guess give us the insight on what you felt there. I mean, I kind of wonder if it was a little bit of a letdown, only because obviously this season of the Ultimate Fighter is airing right now, and it's this cool Black Zillions versus ATT idea, which to me has kind of revitalized the series.
Right.
But we all know they can't do that every time, I guess, because you can't have two camps that are geographically close together and all that. So this is just going back to, as far as we know, now there could be some twists and turns that we don't know about, but it kind of just seemed like another day, right?
Business as usual, yeah. And that's kind of the thought I initially got. When I walked in, I didn't know what to expect. You know, I was kind of waiting to hear, like, have Mara or, you know, Ryan, the two UFC PR personnel that were there, kind of say, oh, okay, by the way, this is what's going to be happening, or this is this, you know. And it's just like, okay, it was pretty much 155s and 170s. Okay, I'm wondering if there's still going to be a twist. And, you know, you're sitting around, you're looking around the room, everybody just kind of getting in line, and it's like business like normal, but there was never any sort of twist. There was just 155s and 170. There was no gimmick or no anything that sort of stood out to say, like, this is what's going to make the season different from the last one. Because, yeah, it just seemed like business as usual. But even with that, you still saw quite a few characters. And there were was told that there were about 400 attendees that were there. It certainly seemed a lot more than that, especially when the line wrapped outside of the room and almost to the point where it was trailing back to the escalator to get back down, you know, minus there was – you know, you have to take into account that there was a buffet line there, so maybe part of that was blending in with the the line. You know,
I'm sure there's a joke there to be made.
Yeah, but yeah, it was pretty incredible though to see everybody there. Everybody was excited to be there. You know, saw some characters, a few costumes and whatnot. You know, and personalities. Unfortunately, we were not able to interact or interview anybody there, so couldn't really get people's stories. You know, you might have saw a guy wearing, you know, there was the gentleman in the tutu and the fairy wings, you know, that when I think about it, I think that only came out in the grappling room. I think that was his little surprise for the grappling room. And speaking of that, too, yeah, they had a pretty sharp cutoff for when the media had to leave, and that was well before they ever got anywhere near to hitting mitts.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean – that's saying something right there, where if you can't even get past what I think they gauge to be the number one maybe qualification, you got to be able to have a ground game. If you don't even have a ground game, we don't care if you hit people. We don't care if you got knockout power, because obviously you're one dimensional. I think they've reached the point where, you know, there was even a gentleman that was out in the main area that was clarifying must have a winning record.
Right.
Not 3-3, not 4-4, you know, not, you know, 3-4, which is close to, you know, 50-50. He said it must be a winning record just for the fact of the sheer level of these contestants that are coming now. So the fact that now guys have to do well, even in that 90 seconds, that's all they get, 90 seconds to prove themselves on the grappling to even whether they even make it to the hitting. I don't know if they have some favorites that they've seen beforehand where – in their mind, they're already like, yeah, I want to see this guy hitting. I know he has a record, you know, because I'm sure everybody has their good days and bad days when they get on the grappling. But I can only imagine the amount of pressure to be able to get in there. You're sitting and they're calling them in groups of 50 into the room.
That's crazy.
You know, everybody's sitting around. They had two mats and they had two guys going on each mat each time. They get both the guys on the thing and then you're ready, go 90 seconds and then boom, time. People would sort of clap. The guys would, you know, pay their respect to each other. Then off the mat, boom, next two guys just chugging through it. And, I mean, it was crazy to see, because that was my first time seeing it, and I had no idea what to sort of expect. But I can only imagine trying to go through the sheer numbers of people. You know, how can you even begin to really gauge all this stuff? And, I mean, I see Sean and I see them, those guys watching. They got people there with them watching, you know. I mean, Boy, what a tough job.
Yeah, and that 90 seconds, man. If you think about it, you know, grappling to make an impression on somebody in 90 seconds, it's not like you're going against a willing training partner that's mm-hmm. letting you do whatever you want to do to show transitions. I mean, you're going against somebody that's trying to get their spot made too. So, 90 seconds is not much time at all.
And it was interesting too is Joe had said, Joe Silva, by the way, matchmaker. I want to call him matchmaker of the stars for some reason. I think that's already taken by somebody. But had pointed out, and he's like, hey, guys, you know, the good thing and the bad thing about this is the good thing is that obviously you're here, you're trying out, you have the right records, you have the skill sets. You know, these divisions are two of the finest divisions, you know, in the sheer terms of the guys having the skills. And he's like, unfortunately, the bad part about that is that a lot of you are so darn good and there's so many, we just can't possibly take that many. I think, what are they going for, like 16 spots or something like that? You have over 400 people. They say 400. I swear it felt like 500. It was huge. I mean, the amount to try to show up and be the cream of the crop there, whoa, that's a lot of pressure.
It's tough because I know the television show, I know a lot of people are tired of Tough. You know, they'll tell you, oh, I don't watch it anymore. I'm sick of it. And I get it. It's been on for a long time. It's been the same for most of the time. But for what it means to those fighters trying to make it to the UFC and those tryout days when you see people that, I mean, man, this is like their hopes and their dreams and like just trying to get a break. I think it's still very intense when you see it from that point of view.
It's hard to not get caught up in it. You know, me, even as just a media person watching it, you can't help but sort of want these guys to do well. And just even just watching, I can only imagine that Joe and those guys, they don't want anybody to fail. Nobody wants to wash out. Nobody wants to see somebody not perform in the biggest chance that they have.
Yeah.
You know, because we talked to, I'm trying to think of the coach we talked to, Clayton mm-hmm. Hires, who's a boxing coach, who's worked on three of the different tough seasons, spoke about, you know, there's always going to be some of the great ones that fall through the cracks. But, you know, even when that happens, these guys, they've made their mark. They've seen them. But, they're, you know, of course the UFC is going to keep track of these guys. They obviously got here for a reason. You know, and I can only imagine the pressure. And it's hard to not just feel for these guys because I know that, you know, they put all together. They maybe scrapped together what money they could to come out here to Vegas and do the interviews. And we've heard that before, you know. Speaking to Alex Davis, you know, about the tryouts that happened in Brazil, you know, where, you know, by no means do the guys that are hurting here hurting like a lot of the guys are financially and economically in Brazil. You know, you got these guys that are pretty much beg, borrowing, and probably literally stealing to get what they can to make it to these tryouts. And then, you know, they had like 90 seconds, if that, to prove their worth. Oh, my Lord.
You could just be sitting home.
Yeah.
Crazy. I still like that part of it. I was kind of bummed that I had to miss it. It was originally supposed to be early in the month. They rescheduled it, and I had to miss it because I had to go on vacation, which bummed. Because all the intensity that you're talking about, that's why I like those days. So glad you got to experience it for the first time. Hopefully I'll get to see the next one. So you got to travel a little bit. I was in Disneyland taking vacation, but you still qualify as the MMA Roadshow.
Yes,
is the MMA Roadshow. Listen, follow us on Instagram if you get a chance. The MMA Roadshow on Instagram. We try to do a good job of whenever one of us is one place. Yep. Sometimes we're in the same place, documenting where we're going. Usually, you're probably going to see more bars than anything else, to be honest with you, because you'll see MMA throughout the day and then bars at night, because that's really about all we get time to do.
To justify it, at times, you know, when you're on the road, they don't have the best internet at venues. But if you stop by a food establishment, a lot of times they do have Wi-Fi.
Yeah, oh yeah, totally.
And if they just so happen to have tasty beverages and, you know, food products, you know, that's a win-win situation.
There you go. But we do appreciate you listening. Obviously, the MMAroadshow.com is where you can direct download it. We've got it on iTunes as well. So if it's on iTunes, man, subscribe to it.
Yeah, we're
review
on the Twitter,
it.
The MMA Roadshow. Just remember that. The
MMA Roadshow. Help us blow up. So we didn't get too much traveling in the last couple of weeks, but we will. We're going to step it up. Like I said, Australia next week, Philippines the week after that, Brazil at the end of the month. So May is going to be a busy month, the MMA Roadshow. June is going to be nuts as well. So the MMA Roadshow will actually get back out on the road. But in the meantime, while we're here, of course, we got you some great interviews. So first up today is going to be Diego Sanchez. Kind of funny how this interview came together. I just saw him tweeting on Twitter. I guess you tweet on Twitter. That's what I saw him doing. But that
not
he
tweeting.
Is – talking about going down to 145 pounds. He is looking to fight in the featherweight division. And I stayed in touch with him. And I said, man, are you sure? He's like, well, I'm kind of thinking about it. I'm thinking about it. And finally said, you know what? I'm ready to make the announcement. I'm ready to go to 145. And I said, well, make that announcement with me, brother. Let's do it.
There you go.
And so talk to Diego Sanchez. The guy has been fighting. You know, a couple weeks ago, a lot was made of the 10-year anniversary of, Forrest Griffin versus Stephen Bonner. And rightfully so. But it's kind of funny. And that was such an incredible fight. We all know what that meant to the UFC and what a place that it has in Dana's heart. But I kind of think people forget that Diego Sanchez won the Ultimate Fighter that night, too. And I think people kind of forget about that. So that was 10 years ago. And
wow.
He's been fighting in the UFC for a decade and putting on some battles, and says, listen, he thinks he's got at least 4 more years left in him and wants to make a run at the title, but at 145 pounds. So sounds like he still may take some lightweight fights as well, but he is serious about featherweight, and he outlined to me what he's doing to get there already and what he's going to do to get there. So stay tuned. Listen next. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, it'll be Diego Sanchez.
How you doing, John?
Good, man. It's good to hear from you, brother. I appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, you too, man. You too. No problem, man. It's about that time anyway, you know? Catch up with the media a little bit, you know?
Yeah, you've been away too long, man. Tell me what it's been like, man. You have been kind of out of the spotlight a little bit. What's been going on?
You know, I had a streak of the injuries, you know? I hurt my knee before I was going to fight in Mexico City in October. So, I didn't need surgery or anything. You know, the LCL was torn, but it was able to heal on its own. So, you know, that I recovered from that injury. And right as soon as I recovered from that injury, I basically shattered my collarbone, requiring an invasive surgery. They went in there, they put a titanium plate in there, they fixed it all up. And, it's just been a lot of soul searching. You know, a lot of figuring stuff out, and just same game. It's a mindset, you know, of a fighter is like, you know, we're gonna have a lot of injuries in our career, and it's either you let the injuries beat you or you beat the injuries. And like for instance, I was talking to Vitor Belfort, and I'm like, yeah, man, I'm down. This is my second surgery. And, I just don't know. Like, it's just hard to get through these surgeries and da 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 da. He's like, how many surgeries do you have? He told me. And I was like, two. He was 21 surgeries. 21. Me? 21 surgeries. So I was like, all right. I was like, I'm not so bad. You know, like, I got 2 surgeries compared to 21. Then there's other guys out there blowing their ACLs and, you know, like look at Dominic Cruz and Rashad. They're going through much more hard times than me, I think. But at the same time, I'm at that age where a lot of deceptive thoughts try to creep in your head at 33. Like, you know, like the outside perspective. You know, people start coming around and start asking you, are you still fighting? Or what are you gonna do? Like just. The retirement word starts coming around, and it's like, so that starts to creep into your head, and if you let it, it can really mess with you. And so, you know, I was just healing up from my injuries. This time though was different. Instead of sitting on the couch, I actually learned from my last surgery when I had my shoulder done in 2012. You know, it took me 8 months of not doing much. And you know, I had to really, really be careful. And of course, that was a different type of surgery than the collarbone surgery. But I basically I sat around and didn't do too much. And so this time was different. And I was in the gym every single day, not the mixed martial arts gym, but I was in the regular gym. I mean, I made it my job to go to the gym. I would stay there. I would do legs every single day. I would work on my flexibility. My physical therapy, foam rolling. I mean, I was able to increase my flexibility. I was able to lower my body fat, and you know, I really just took it as a whole fitness approach. Like, you know, like let's just not tackle this injury. You know, let's tackle it as a whole. I'm going to tackle everything and my entire body, my energy system, my diet, my nutrition, and just everything. And so I really went to work, and I was in the gym and the whole time, and every day just kept getting better and better and better. And now I'm at the point where I go tomorrow for what I'm hoping is my last follow-up. I go, it's feeling good. There's still some nerve numbness where they went in, but you know, I'm feeling good. I'm able to shadow box and I'm able to work on my mixed martial arts a little bit, but I'm feeling good and I'm getting excited.
You mentioned that retirement word and people kind of bringing it up a little bit. I mean, was there ever a point where you thought, man, maybe that is the right answer for me. Maybe I am done fighting.
You know what? That never. It was always from the out. It was always coming from the outside, not the inside, because me as a fighter, I just have such a passion for martial arts, and even fighting in the UFC for 10 years consistently. Maybe I'm actually, I think, the longest consistent fighter that's fought every single year for 10 years. And I've never really gotten burnt out, because if it was training one thing, maybe get a little burnt out. I always just had fun with martial arts. I've always loved it, and it's what I'm good at. It's what I know, and so retirement was never in my mind. I never really thought. I always thought. Okay, at 37 years old, that's when I'm gonna decide. You know, I'm gonna think about it. At 37 is when I want to think about it. All right, that's what I always put that number in my head. I always put that number in my head. At 37, I'll reassess and see where I'm at. So at 33, it's never been a question for me. I don't really, it's not something that I want to do, because as long as I can fight. And see, I'm not going out there and getting knocked out or getting submitted. You know, in my career, I had the one fight with BJ that got stopped on the cut, and as far as that's probably the worst ass kicking that I took. And so, you know, it's not like I'm going out there, I'm getting dominated or anything. My last fight, I went out and fought Ross Pearson. It was a close fight. I felt I won the fight. I truly watched it about 5,000 times. Muted on my TV, and I felt that I won round one and round three. You know, there was a lot of controversy, but you know, the judges seen what they seen. I seen what the judges seen also, and I was able to lay that fight to rest and move forward.
Why is 37 a number? Why did you pick that number out?
You know what? I just from a retrospective things, just looking at all the fighters over time. And just seeing how, at 37, you know, that's kind of when I assume, like, I could see these fighters at 37 starting to decline, you know, in speed and just starting to decline a little bit. So I just said, you know what, I'm gonna wait till at 37 and reassess. And of course, I want to be like a Randy Couture and fight till I'm older if my body allows me and I'm healthy enough. Yes, of course I want to keep doing it. You know, look, there's Dan Anderson, there's Vitor Belfort, there's these other fighters, you know, Anderson Silva, other fighters who have been able to fight competitively. And into their older age, and so I just said, you know what, at 37 I'm gonna consider it. You know, consider. You know, I'm just gonna reassess everything at 37, and if it's time to retire at 37, I think that's a number where I would be comfortable saying, okay, it's time to walk away from the sport.
Let's talk about the reason that you kind of got my attention was seeing you tweeting that you were thinking about moving down to 145 pounds, and it seems over the last couple of days you've decided you're going to featherweight. Is that the case? You're definitely going to 145 pounds?
That's the case, yeah. You know, let me tell you how this all came about. You know, I've never really considered 45s that much. You know, it's never really been under my radar. I've never really thought about going down to 45s. You know, and then of course this guy Conor McGregor, he came around and you know just had great, tremendous success. And you know, I'm not a Conor McGregor hater. I'm actually a fan of the guy. I don't, you know, some of the stuff he does, you know. Talking crap and not respecting the fighters that you know are in the division, but all around I'm a fan of the guy. And there was some things that a couple things that I saw that attributed to his success. And the first thing was his size. I saw that he had a very big size advantage and reach advantage. And the guy was able to make weight and keep his strength. And that's one thing I think he's best at, is making weight, keeping his strength, and going in there and feeling good. And so, like, I was like, well, okay, this guy, I've seen this guy, and he's about my size, you know? So it kind of struck me as, well, maybe I could do this. Maybe I could make 45. I thought about it, and I'm like, nah, I think I'll just stay at 55. You know, it's a better place for me. I'm already, you know, walking around 190, so you know, I'll stick around at 155. And I never thought anything of it. And then these injuries came along, and I'm sitting at home, and my manager calls me up, and he's like, how are you? Are you in shape? And I'm like, well, you know, I've been in the gym, you know, like, I have a broken collarbone, so I haven't been able to do much upper body training. You know, I haven't even been able to really run yet, but I think I'm not too bad out of shape. I was trying to lean up a little bit for a tough Latino, appearance that I had to do. I didn't want to go on tough looking like the fat old guy. So I was dieting a little bit, and I was already losing a little bit of weight. And he's like, well, he's like, there's this supplement company, and you know, I could get you some decent money on this deal. And he's like, but they you know, they want you to be ripped. It's a fat burner. And so I was like, well, how about this? I was all, ask them if they'll do this. We'll do the before and afters, and I'll actually use their product. And, you know, if it works, it works. And we could, you know, I'll get the deal. I'll make a little money for my family while I'm in between fights, and everything will be good. And, if not, if they don't want me, I'm already lean, and when I'm healed up, I'm already, you know, I don't have to lose all that weight before I take another fight. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to do this. I'm going to commit myself to this weight cut, and I'm going to really focus on, since I can't be in the mixed martial arts gym, I can't be in there at Jackson's working on all of my skill set. I'm going to attack this with a different type of skill set. I'm going to attack my diet, my nutrition. I mean, I'm going to be meticulous, and I'm really going to go for this because it was a good payday. And so I was like, all right, I'm going to go for this. And you know what? I just, the weight started coming off so fast. And 1 month in, I was already down to 170 pounds. And I was about, basically as lean as I am going into a fight at 155. And so I'm like, all right, you know what? Like, I'm not even in the gym, and I'm able to get this lean right now. Although 145 is realistic now. Now it has become a realistic option. And so I weighed out all the positives, the negatives, and as positive, you know, I wanna be one of the UFC fighters. Kenny Florian's the only other fighter to compete in four divisions, and but you know, he didn't win at 185, but he competed in four divisions, and I wanna be I want to be the one that actually wins 185. I'll win to fight at 180. I want to fight at 185, want to fight at 70, want to fight at 55, and now I want to go down to 45 and want to fight at 45, you know. And so that was a positive. The other positives that I looked at, I looked at John Jones and Luke Rockhold. Those two guys are the guys that I looked at, and I'm like, okay, these guys are wrestlers, okay? They're wrestlers, and they're very tall, and they're very lanky for their divisions. And as I watch these guys fight, that just the leverage alone that they have, and the distance that they have, that the height and the reach is a tremendous advantage that they are able to utilize because they're wrestlers. See, there's other tall guys, you know, that can fight, but if they don't have wrestling, then, you know, they get taken down and they could get back up and keep it and play their striking game, or try their jiu-jitsu game. But it's the real, it's the wrestlers that are long and strong that I've been noticing, just if they can use that leverage and that reach and that height advantage, they can control. And they can use it to control and not necessarily be the quickest, fastest guys. I don't think that Luke and John are the quickest, fastest guys, but you look at Daniel Cormier. That guy's an Olympic wrestler, and you know, you didn't think that John was gonna even be able to, you know, stop his takedowns and go in there and do what he did in that fight, but he did, you know, and I think that attributes to his leverage. And so I was like, all right, you know, like this is starting to make sense now. I'll have more leverage. I'm a wrestler. I'll be able to kick better. I'll be able to knee better. I'll be striking downward on opponents. Cause I was looking at the roster at 145 and most of the guys are 5'6", 5'7", 5'8" at the tops, you know, and then you got, Conor McGregor, who's 5'9", you got Max Holloway, who's 5'11". He's actually the tallest guy in the division. But for the most part, the wrestlers are short guys. So I was like, well, look, do this right. I can go into this division and basically be the tallest wrestler, and I feel like I could do good in this division. I really feel like with a lot of discipline in the diet and the nutrition, which I've proved to myself now in the off season that I could do this now. I feel like, okay, I can go down to 145 and I can have some real true success. And it's not only that. The lightweight division is so stacked right now, and it's just working my way up. Like I only have, you know, I can only fight so many fights, and I'm gonna have to work my way up a lot of fights through a lot of tough guys in a stacked division. And so it just was like common sense to me. All right, you know, like if you can do it, then do it. And so I just, I'm doing it. I'm going down to 145, and I think there's some great fights down there at 145. Like even right away, I'm going to be a force in the division right away. And I know all the 45 pounders are like, oh, if you can make weight, yeah, if you can make weight, if Diego can make weight, like that. I know that's what they're going to be saying, like. But you know what? I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna make weight, and I'm going down to this division. And there's great fights down there. A fight I know the fans would like to see would be a rematch with Clay Guida. You know, we put on a great fight at one point, and you know he's in the top 10, and you know he's not on my team anymore. So that's a fight that could happen. I would love the ultimate fight that I like the best is Ricardo Lamas. Because, you know, he's coming off of a tough loss, you know, he's coming off a tough knockout loss, but the guy is a come forward fighter that won't like try to run away. This guy fights. He doesn't run away. You know, he's not going to play I'm afraid of you, I'm going to run away. He's going to come forward and fight. And those are ultimately the best fights for me that showcase my skills and give the fans the best fights. So that's a fight I'm eyeing. But any of those guys, I'll fight any of those guys at 145. And you know, I want to make a run for the belt, and that's my dream, is to be the UFC champion, and I'm not gonna give up on my dream despite what the haters or the naysayers may say. I'm going down to 145, and I'm going for the belt.
That's awesome, man. What's the name of the supplement company, by the way? I don't know if you ever mentioned the actual name.
It's the name of the supplement company is called First. It's called Instant Knockout, and it's a fat burner. And you know, I've been taking it; it works great. You know, of course, I've been dieting hard. You know, but it's definitely worked. And after the photo shoot, you know, of course, all the pictures will be posted and stuff, so everybody will be able to see that I'm not playing around. I'm not messing around. I'm not just chubby drinking beer, burrito eating Diego Sanchez at 170. You know, like I'm on point with my nutrition game right now. This injury has really focused me to realize that, you know what, you have to eat. And you know, it's just one of those things. You know, we all have our ups and downs, but diet has been one thing that I've always struggled with. I always struggle with diet. And these injuries focused me to get it on point. And I feel great, man. I feel awesome. My knees feel good. I'm light. You know, I'm 20 pounds lighter. I feel faster. I feel like I've been able to keep my strength. And I'm just excited to come back. I'm excited to get back into Jackson, to start working with Greg again on, I miss it. I miss it like crazy. I've been watching fights every night, and I miss playing the game of martial arts, but one thing that's going to change, I'm going to take the Robbie Lawler approach now. I want to make it to the fights. I've done thousands of rounds in my career, and you know, right now I need to focus on my skills. You know, focus on my footwork, focus on my speed, focus on my, you know, on my tactical skills, my techniques. Because right now, it's sparring. You know, all it's going to do is get me injured, and I'm going to really tone down the sparring, and just because I know once I get to the fight night, as long as I'm healthy, I know how to fight. I've been doing it for so long that I know what I'm doing in there.
Yeah. Are you able to say what you're walking around at right now?
I'm walking around 170. Yeah, I'm walking around 170 right now, and I'm about down to about 6 or 7% body fat, and I'm still going. I'm still cutting. Like I fell in love with this obsessiveness to become lean. Like, you know, it's like it becomes an obsession after a while. Like at first it was just a little project to make some money for my family, but now it has become an obsession, and it's fun. It's a new obsession for me. You know, and everybody likes that lean six pack look. You know, it's going to open up a lot of doors for me in fitness and health and nutrition. It's all around, it's a smart decision. Look better, feel better, just compete better. Just it's a good thing for me right now, and why not? You know, why not be a lean, mean fighting machine? You know, I always dreamed of being shredded like a Bruce Lee. Well, you know, why not do it? You know.
That's awesome. What are your diet principles? I mean, to share, you know, is it vegetarian? Is it vegan?
I ain't telling my secrets, John. I can't tell my secrets. I do have a secret diet that I'm doing, and that'll probably come out in the book when I do a book, because it really is a secret. The diet that I'm doing, I basically took in all the things that I've learned over the years, you know, man, going back to Rob Garcia, back when I was working with him, I worked with Mike Dolce, I did all the diets. I did all the fat diets, I did the juice diets, I did the cleanses, I did all the diets, and you know what, I found something that works for me, and I'm good at it, and that's the difference.
That's awesome. Well, when do you think you'll fight again, Diego? I mean, how soon do you think you can be ready to go?
You know what? I'm actually I feel like I'm in fight shape already, so it will be a quick turnaround for me, and I'm not ruling out fights at 155. So if something opens up at 155 and there is a great opportunity, I'm gonna fight 55 too. If something opens up, if somebody gets hurt and they need somebody to jump in there and fight at 55, I'll do it. As long as I'm healthy and I'm ready, I'll do it. But as far as right now, I go tomorrow to the doctor and we'll see how the bone is doing. Last time they said it was healing perfectly. And that was about a month ago, so we'll see what they say. And if they give me the go-ahead, regardless, I'm starting in at Jackson on the first of the month, and I'm going back to my mixed martial arts training. And if I can't hit with my left hand, then I'm just going to work on my kicks, work on my grappling, work on what I can do, you know, as long as the doctor clears.
Nice. Well, I mean, it's funny, you know, the 10-year anniversary of the Ultimate Fighter 1 was just a couple weeks ago, and everybody was talking about, you know, and remembering, of course, the Forrest and the Stefan fight. But, you know, obviously, you won the Ultimate Fighter that night, too. That was 10 years ago. So what's left? I mean, you said you still got a few years left, but give fans an idea, man. A decade into this, you've got a ton of fans. You've put on wars throughout the year. What's left in the career of Diego Sanchez?
I'm going for it, man. Oh, that's all that's left. Is I'm going for it. I'm not looking back. The past is the past. The future is the future. And I'm going forward. I'm going to continue to give great fights. You know, I'm there. I'm clean. I'm clear. I'm happy. And I'm fighting for all the right reasons now. And I'm going for the belt. I'm still going for the belt. I'm eyeing that 145-pound belt. And I do want to fight with Conor McGregor. That's a fight that I want. This guy, he drives me to be a better mixed martial artist. He drives me to evolve. He drives me to, this guy drives me in a positive way. So that's a fight that I think is going to happen. And so I'm looking for that fight. I'm looking for any of the top guys at 145. I really want to fight at 145. I'm tired of being the short guy and I want to be the tall guy. It's such a better thing to be the tall guy. If you could wrestle is the factor. The if you could wrestle factor is the factor. And so, you know, I want to go in there. I want to knee some people in the face. I want to kick some people in the head. And, you know, I want to showcase some new skills that I've been working on in my mind, you know, and that's the difference. I've been working on my martial arts in my mind. I have some new stuff. And I want to apply that to the featherweight division, and just a whole new saga for Sanchez.
That's awesome, Diego. Well, man, that was a great interview. It was great to get caught up with you. And man, I'll check back in with you after your doctor's appointment, if that's okay, and just kind of stay in touch with you.
Definitely, John. Thank you for taking the time. I appreciate it.
You got it, brother. Talk to you soon. Thanks, Diego.
Have a good day. God bless.
So that was Diego Sanchez, the nightmare, the dream, whatever you want to call him. He changes his nickname sometimes.
Yeah.
It's
hey,
great
to
catch up with Diego.
He would be a nightmare at that weight, that's for sure. You know, that's a big cut going down from like 170 down to 145. You know, I mean, that's like a Chael level cut. That's a big cut. But man, oh, he would be strong at that.
I'll tell you what, though, I won't question him, man. If he says he can do it, I believe him. That guy. His work ethic is incredible, and he's had some ups and downs along the way. I mean, he's made it clear that he's battled some demons along the way, and you know, maybe had some setbacks that he could have avoided. But I will never question the man's work ethic and his desire. You know, it's funny. I don't know if you, and I'm sure you probably did it at some point or another. But cover a Diego Sanchez open workout.
Sure. Oh yeah.
The guy's funny because the open workout sessions at UFC events. I mean, there's some fighters, like for instance, there's Dan Henderson, who doesn't do anything. He walks out. He shuffles out, slides his feet, you know, and just stands there and takes a couple pictures and looks left and right, and that's that. There's other fighters that, you know, you kind of have to talk them into it, and they're basically like shadow box, and they're like, am I done yet? Am I done yet? Am I done yet? And then there's Diego Sanchez, who uses the media workout session as a full, complete workout. And, gosh, the fight in Dallas, man – because the fight in Albuquerque, they didn't do an open workout session. They just did a media day. But the fight in Dallas, you know, he had on one of those training mask things and did like a 45-minute power yoga session that was just incredible. So
and that was before he worked out some more, right?
Didn't that was the warm up. I was like, dude, you gotta be kidding me. So Diego, man, when he is into it, that guy throws down.
It's hard to question somebody so passionate to not believe that they're not going to do what they say. I mean, that guy, every time he goes out there, it's hard to not root for him. It's hard to not believe that. I mean, when he goes out there and he gets that look, especially right before he walks out into the arena, you know, it's like, fuck. That guy wanted, he would walk through a concrete wall, and I don't doubt it because he's just got that sheer determination. So if he says he's going to do it, you know, why doubt it?
Yep.
You know, and, oh, man, good luck to him.
Great to hear from Diego Sanchez. I think that would be cool to see him at 145 pounds. As long as he's healthy, you know, he brought up Kenny Florian, and I didn't have the heart to tell him. I'm like, most people think Kenny almost died when he got to 145. So, I mean, we'll see.
Another good guy we need to get on here. Get Florian and Anik on here.
We do. We will. That's going to happen. There's no doubt about that. So, good to hear from Diego Sanchez, man. I really appreciate taking the time. He doesn't do a ton of interviews, so it was nice to hear from him.
Yes, thank you, Diego.
That brings us to our next interview of the day, which is Bert Watson.
Oh, one of my favorites. One of my dear favorites.
Babysitter to the stars. Of course, not with the UFC any longer. Everybody knows the, you know, kind of what's gone down at this point. You know, there was some internal conflict, and ultimately I think everybody just decided to go their separate ways. And, you know, kind of a shame. I think a lot of people really miss Bert. The outpouring of support on Twitter was incredible, and Facebook, you know, social media. So, but Bert is getting back into the game. And he gives us an update on kind of what he's been up to and what he's got coming up. And, of course, anytime you get Bert Watson, you get a few behind-the-scenes stories. He tells us a little bit about some things that happened in his day and even gave his thoughts on John Jones. Figured it was worth asking him about. You know, with all that's going on, certainly not asking Bert to pass judgment on anybody, but at least
Sure. Just
give us his thoughts on what he thought about it. So hang tight, take a brief break. When we come back, Bert Watson, Babysitter to the Stars. So you know on the MMA Roadshow, we only bring you the biggest of guests. And it is my pleasure right now to not only have my man Cole Coffee sitting right next to me as we do this, but to bring on the line Bert Watson, the legend that is Bert Watson, still the babysitter of the stars, right? I mean, no matter what, you're always going to be babysitting stars. Ain't that right, Bert Watson?
For real, man. I mean, you know, it's first of all, I appreciate you guys having me, man. But yeah, that looks like that's going to stick, and I'm good with that because it's, you know, it kind of identifies how I really feel, and babysitting ain't bad, you know.
I hear that, man. I hear that. I was just at Disneyland for a couple of days babysitting my little one, man. There's nothing wrong with that. Seeing the smiles on the faces.
Not even a little bit, because they sure do tell you if you did a good job or not.
That's awesome. Well, let us know, man. Obviously, you've kind of taken a couple weeks to yourself. You came out and did a few interviews and set the world straight. I know that you're not a huge media guy, but, I mean, there were just so many questions that people wanted answered. You came out and answered everything you could, and then you kind of pulled back a little bit and enjoyed your time. I know that you got some family that you hadn't seen in a long time that you were able to catch up with, but tell us what you've been up to, man. What's been going on in the interim?
14 years of family catch-up, baby, and I've been doing it and enjoying every bit of it. You know, just kind of slowed down a little bit, have not stopped, because when you stop, that means you run out of gas, and I am not out of gas yet, baby. I've been kind of entertaining a few things. Just last week, I was out in Kansas City for my first time, with, you know, the Kansas City Fighting Alliance. They brought me out basically to do what I do best, run my mouth good and loud. I did the weigh-in, kind of talked to a couple of their fighters before the weigh-in, after the weigh-in. And fight night, I actually kind of gave a little talk, gave some rules and some things that they wanted me to do, and it was unbelievable, man. It was the first time I'd ever done that. First time I'd ever sat through a fight, walked the main event to the cage, and sat down. First time ever. Stephanie. And not only that, but it was also the very first time that I'd ever gotten an opportunity to actually see amateurs fight. I had never seen amateur MMAs, aside from, you know, possibly Ultimate Fighter or something like that, but I've never actually seen amateur fighters or anything with the amateur program, but I got a chance to see that. They had 14 fights, and out of the 14, I think five or six of them were amateur fights. And, you know, they go 2 5-minute rounds. It was unbelievable. You know, I can see why MMA has gotten as popular as it has. It's got a darn good feeder system, baby. And those guys, you know, I tell the guys who are at the top of the heap, you know, at the professional, real professional levels, you know, that their biggest achievement is getting there. You got to stay there. And I tell them everybody can fight. Well, I saw the feeder system of that this past weekend. Psh, and them kids were scrapping, baby. I mean, they were scrapping good and hard. And it was good. It was fun. I had a great time.
That's awesome. It is interesting. Yeah, we do. We have Tough Enough out here in Las Vegas that I do color commentary for. And it is interesting to see, you know, the next level of people. I mean, yes, they've still got a long way to go to reach the top, but they're working on it. And I got to ask, what was their reaction to you? Because, I mean, to think, you know, that every fighter out there training right now, they're dreaming of being in the UFC. They're watching the UFC. They're seeing, they know who you are. They know your name.
Right.
They see.
Right.
What was the look on their face and their eyes and their face? Could you feel their energy?
Yeah, I did, you know, and you can see when someone looks at you and they're looking at you kind of with surprise and they got questions, or they want to ask you and they don't want to ask you, or they want to ask you for a picture but really don't want to ask you. And, you know, this is all kind of, honestly, you know, in my career, throughout my career, you know, cameras were always there. You know, the whole 14 years, there was always cameras. You know, I couldn't help cameras because that was my world. Backstage, behind the scenes, you know, in and out of you guys and not to get in your way. You know, so I never really kind of paid attention to and was never really a camera guy because I was always trying to get out of the way. I always figured, you know, my grandkids would say, "Papa, we saw the fight. We tried to see you." I said, you know what, if you really see me on the camera doing fight time, Pop-Pop ain't working, baby. You know, he ain't working. So, but it was, you know, it was, I could see it in their eyes, and they knew, you know, they knew of my experiences, and they knew that I've dealt with, you know, the majority of the guys at the top level, at a high level, and, you know, that I've gotten mostly through by motivating the guys, and, you know, it was fun. It was strange to see that kind of response and that kind of reception, but I can see it was real.
Yeah,
and I can see they meant it. Maybe they were excited, you know. And one of the, in fact, the young lady, and I also got to present the belt on the two.
Wow.
the two of them won the KCFA belt, which I've never done in my entire career. And the young lady, you know, her name was Jay Chun. She said to me, she said, "Yeah, I've heard, and I hear you're real famous." And I'm looking at her like, "You're probably more famous than I am, baby." When I went in the cage to give her belt, man, she was jumping up and down, and, you know, it got a little mushy for me, man, because, I mean, they were sincere, you know. And that's kind of one of the things that's been easy for me to do my job, because I give it sincerely and I get it back sincerely, man. When them guys come to me, you know, it's real.
No doubt.
It's for real. They mean it. But I tried to do that. Oops, could I say that?
You can say whatever you want, baby.
I tried to do that, you know, back in boxing. And it's always been one of those things. But it was off the chain.
That's awesome.
You know, the people were there. And most of these, you know, the amateurs, you know, that program, and I kind of lost track of that, but it was the same way in boxing, where amateurs, you know, they got tickets and they sold tickets for their families. And, You know, if you gave an amateur 100 tickets, he sold 100 because he had 100 family people members in one house to sell tickets to.
Yep.
So they had a ton of people there, and even their family members were, oh, we can't wait till you get him. We can't wait till he gets to that level. It was kind of surreal, man.
That's awesome. Well, we're going to get to see you back in action, maybe on TV this, you know, next week in Mississippi. You say you try to avoid the camera, but I got to think they're going to try to get you on camera a little bit here. It's
I think they're going to try to do that. And I'm going to be in Tunica, Mississippi,
right,
next Friday, Thursday and Friday for RFA and Legacy. You know, they called me to do that, and right now that's what I'm entertaining. I mean, I'm entertaining the thought of you know, doing weigh-ins and doing fights and, you know, any type of motivational stuff that I could do. I'm good to do that. You know, I mean, I thrive off of that. And when they asked me to do it, you know, I said, sure, why not?
I
didn't really know that it was going to be as big a deal as it's going to be, you know, but it's Access TV. It's, you know,
I'm
ready, baby. I'm ready to roll.
I love it, Bert. I'm excited to see it. I know I'll be tuned in, you know, watching it. And the thing I'm excited about is because, you know, when you first left the UFC, a lot of people asked me, John, man, what's the UFC going to do? How are things going to run the same? And what I said was, and it's kind of, you know, just a product of all your work. I mean, you had the systems in place. You had the people in place. You had built a team. So the UFC is going to run the same. You guys had the operations. They're not going to skip a beat. But and I think we saw it in the fighter outpouring on Facebook and Twitter and everything else. It's that motivation, that thing that you did on fight night, the way that you kind of got people. You know, not only did you care about them all week long, but it was the way you helped guys kick it into that next gear on fight night that I think is irreplaceable. And I think it's awesome that you're taking basically your skills and your talents to these other organizations and letting these other fighters get a taste of that.
Well, I'm having a good time. You know, a real good time doing it. And you know, I created the system, and I can honestly say that, because if I didn't in 14 years, then something was wrong. You know, I created the system. I taught the system, you know, and I know because when they started, there was only, three or four fights, you know. So I know that, and I know that the people around me, they had to learn that system very quickly. And you know what? The UFC is going to move on. Shit, they move so fast, I don't know. I don't think they even know I'm gone yet. That's how fast they move.
Wait.
You know, so they're going to move on. They're going to keep going, you know, and stuff happens with them. You know, do they handle it properly? You know, it's hard to handle things properly when you move as fast as they move, unless I'm handling it.
Hey, Bert, cold coffee here. Hey, question for you. Besides the fact that you know that you had the system in place, did it really surprise you? Because it sounds like, you know, even though the system is in place and the UFC is able to keep going, what fighters missed the most was that emotional connection that you had with them that brought out for them what made it feel like, here it is, here's my fight night. Were you surprised by the outpouring and what you heard from fighters after the fact? You know, saying that things are going to be different. You know, it's not going to be the same. Were you surprised by that?
I was totally surprised. It was a bit overwhelming. You know, I've heard a couple of fighters. You know, I've heard fighters say, you know, man, if you're ever gone, and when you're gone, things are really not going to be the same. You know, and people say things in the moment and while you're going. But when they say the same thing after the moment, then you got to sit back and that's when you know they really meant it. Because they were saying, I mean, there's like 510 fighters probably on contract. Yeah. I swear to you, I've either got a text or heard from 300. Half of them.
Wow.
Half of them in one way or another. Over the course of the last, you know, I heard from three or four of them today that said they were waiting till the smoke cleared to call me. I said, well, you'd have been waiting for a while because I'm still smoking, baby. You know? I'm still trying to run a little game. But, you know, it's, yes, I'm surprised because, as I said, when people say things to you in the heat of the moment, you know, it's when the moment's gone and they're still saying it the same way with the same passion that you know they mean it. That makes me feel real good. But at the same time, I'm never going to do anything that I could even imagine to lose that because I worked too hard to get it.
That's awesome. Never. That's awesome.
And I can see it. I mean, there are things going on right now that people are shaking their heads about. And, you know, and every time something happens, it makes you scratch your head. You know, you're like, what the, how the, you know, but I've seen that my entire career. I've seen that back in the days of Joe Frazier and Muhammad and Sugar Ray Leonard. I worked with Camacho, okay? So, I mean, you know, I've seen things and you're shaking your head and but you know what? It goes on. It keeps continuing. And, you know, they find a way to get it done.
Right, right. Well, speaking of that, Bert, when you said you see things and you do things, it's got to be hard on your end to not connect to these fighters and then probably feel some sense of ownership. I know when I'd seen in the past, you know, I'd hear you say something along the lines of, you know, you took the babysitting part to heart. You know, when you'd see a guy get in trouble, when you'd see a guy, you know, maybe not doing right on weight, I saw you take that personally. You know, was it hard to not take that personally and become involved with these fighters' lives who were pretty much, you're seeing them through their highs and lows through their career?
It was very hard not to take that personally. You know, when you commit yourself to them personally, they give it to you personally. And you know, that's one of the reasons why I never really watched the fight, because I had no favorites. I had no guy, neither one that I wanted to win or one to lose, unless one of them made me mad, you know. And then I might have said, that's okay, you're going to get yours tonight. And then, you know what, if he got it, I'd be the first guy to hug him and put my arms around him and cry with him, you know. But it's you take it to heart very easily, and it's not hard to do if you really, really mean it. From the offset of my career, that was my intention, to be that liaison in between and to be the buffer, you know, for these guys, between the promoters and the promotions and operations and the media, you know, as much as I could, you know, because once they got that comfort level and they give it to you, man, they give you all of it. The
yep.
good, the bad, the highs, the lows, they cry. You get them out of trouble. You know, I'll never forget the one time I went to my dressing rooms early in the morning. I'm on my way back in the hotel in the revolving door. As I'm going in the revolving doors, the police are going out the revolving door with my fighter in handcuffs. who was supposed to be in the cage in 4 hours. And I'm looking at my, what the hell? And you know what? I had to put them shoes on and go down to the police station. And you know that, but I'm from Philly, so walking in there wasn't the strangest thing I've ever done in my life. Yeah. So, I had to go in there and go through it. You know, and I knew that it was one of those things where when they get you down there, you got to go through the system. So you can't go in there and flex in and, I got to get this guy. You know, I had to go in there a little humble. You know, eat a little humble pie to find out where he was, who had him, where he was. Because it didn't matter to them that he was supposed to get in that cage in 4 hours. You know, it mattered to them to go through that system. And I just, you know, I had to eat humble pie, and I did. And I had a chance to see him, but he didn't get out.
That was the Jeremy Stevens situation, right?
Yowza.
Yeah, that was a crazy day, man.
You know, and it was, you know, I got stuck in Minneapolis. I got stuck on the elevator 2 hours and 40 minutes with BJ Penn, four of his brothers, and two corners.
What?
That's well, a full elevator.
By the time we got out of that elevator, two of them had cried their manhood through the hole. And I had to comfort them. You know, BJ Penn was sitting there, and he was telling me his story. He was sweating. And I'm afraid of height. And I from height you go to, you know, to being claustrophobic. And I couldn't show them that. But I struggled. And that was 2 hours and 40 minutes, man. And you know what? They gave me all of it for 2 hours and 40 minutes.
That's nuts, man. That was a crazy weekend because the Dennis Hallman situation was that weekend, too, where he kind of had
Yeah. It was kind of yucky.
So if you don't go back to Minneapolis anytime soon, you're okay with that.
Now, it was also the thing, as I said earlier, that when these guys let you in that fraternity and they give you that comfort level, man, they give it to you all. They give it all to you. And when you get it, you got to be able to handle it, man. You got to know. And I know it's that part of what I do that would probably be hard for somebody else to do because no two fingerprints are the same, baby.
Yep.
None. No handprints. No footprints. They're all different. You know? And I'm a firm believer when you touch somebody, they should stay touched.
Oh, yeah.
For real, baby.
Well, Bert, let me ask you. I know when all this initially went down, you know, your quote was, "Listen, man, I'm too old to have regrets. You know, I'm good with what happened, and that's okay." But in the time since, any second thoughts or any shot at reconciliation with the UFC? Any point down the line, or are you just not even considering that anymore?
I'm good. I miss the money. I'm too old to have regrets. You know, if somebody comes to me and say, "Hey, you know what? We got another job." I mean, I'm just talking in general.
Right.
You know, I don't really, as I said before, the UFC was going so fast, I don't even think they know I'm gone yet. You know, we were at a point where there was 42, 43 shows. I don't want to do that again. I don't want to do 35 shows again a year. I don't want to do 30 shows again a year. You know, I don't mind teaching somebody else how to sustain that amount of shows or how to do that or the consistency of starting that so that, you know, when you start at a certain level, what I've learned is that the best thing that you can do is to create a system that withstands the test of time. And not only that, but it is also, you know, it can develop with the growth of whatever it is that you're doing without making any major changes. And I want to teach younger organizations and younger promoters and people to do that. I don't want to do that anymore myself. You know, I got a little more than a half a tank of gas left, and I don't want to burn it out on the highway doing 150 miles an hour. I want to drive my car speed limit, 55, 60. And that's it. And honestly, and I'll say this, you know, you guys are my boys, man. You know, if the UFC wanted it any differently, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now.
Yeah.
I haven't heard anything. I haven't talked to anybody. And I'm good with that.
Yeah.
You know, if I wasn't good, I wouldn't be able to say that. I'd be still scratching my head wondering why. But I'm good with that. I am good, and even more so that I've seen and I've listened to the response of others to the work that I did and the work that's, you know, and it only validated me thinking in my head, you know what? I can legitimately teach others to do that.
Yeah.
I can legitimately teach other promoters or other coordinators how to do that, you know, because a lot of people think coordinating is just that, you know, it's just, You're back there, you know, and I did much more than yell and scream, had everybody roll into the hole, you know, and there's so much more to it, and I want to be able to teach that, but no, I'm not waiting for a phone call. I'm not looking for a phone call. I'm good.
Bert, did you ever try to reach out and give a call yourself?
Yes, I did.
You did try? Okay.
I did that the day after it happened.
Oh, okay.
The day after it happened, because I knew that that story was going to make its way to the top of the food chain through somebody else's words. And I knew that, and I tried to catch it, just like when it started coming out, blaming the different fighters and so forth. And I figured, you know what? I need to go catch that. Oh yeah, I did. You know, I reached out, but that was it. And that was. I felt a comfort level by doing that.
Yeah.
You know, I reached out.
You could say you
and
tried.
I didn't get a response back.
Yep. You could say you tried. That's even better. No regrets on that. It's not like you were like, oh, you know, I'm going to wait for that call. I'm not going to give him a call.
No,
you were the bigger
no.
man. You stepped up. You tried.
Yeah.
You know, that's all you can ask for.
I've always said, I'm too old for regrets. And, you know, it's been too long. I've done this too long. This, my career, you know, 30 years, man, 35
wow.
years between boxing and this. No.
That's amazing.
I'm not on my knees. You know, like I do miss the money, though. You know, you do miss that check, you know, but, you know, other than that, I'm good.
Well,
the same way I made that hustle, I'm going to keep hustling.
Well, Bert, you've made lasting impressions with a lot of people. Now, here's one thing that I think people, you know, fans might not know. The ultimate in respect is when Bert Watson gives you a nickname, right? I mean, everybody gets excited when they got
true.
A name. And it's funny because we've been doing this podcast a couple weeks now, and pretty much my boy here, everybody knows he's Ken Hathaway, but on air he's just Cold Coffee.
Cold Coffee.
And that's a Bert Watson nickname. That's where that came from. And so I got to ask, because I know people, I've been around the world, you know, you see me in places, and I know the operations teams, and they get excited, you know, to have a nickname given by Bert Watson is like an honor. So I got to ask, when did you start doing this? Is this something you've done your whole life? Is it something in boxing? Like, how is it that you started, like, just handing people nicknames?
It's funny because I listened to your, I don't even know how I ended up listening to your on the road podcast or whatever the show you had. I was listening and I heard you say, my man Cold Coffee. You know, I said, yeah! Because I knew I gave it to you. You know, that again, it started back with, and I can honestly tell you, was it, I can't remember who it was, but it's always been a thing with me, and I can give you, I've always believed that the worst thing you can do to somebody is mess up their name.
Right.
You know, and when you're in this sport or in boxing, Alex Karalexis, I could not pronounce that forever. And he was the first one. He was one of the first guys that, you know, he got offended because you messed up his name. And he said to me, I think it was right after the show, he said, you got to learn to get my name right.
Wow.
Because I couldn't.
Wow, you took it personal.
So, yeah, and you know what? I know that, and people do that. So then I said to him, I said, you know what, baby? You know how you get people to remember your name? You do something.
Nice.
You do something with it, or you do something good. And you know what? Everybody will remember it. You know, but that was my getting back. But, Manny Gamburian, I couldn't get hit. You know what? Ivan was a salivary.
Yeah.
You know how I first said his name? Ivan Slavery.
Oh.
Ouch.
You know, so, you know what, and that was just me looking at it. So I've always had in my head, don't ever mess up a person's name. So if I can't pronounce your name or I have a hard time, boom, you get a nickname. And you know what? I don't forget the nicknames I give you. And then it became a natural thing. You know, it just became a natural thing that I, you know, I don't know if you know, sometimes I call you Jay Moore.
Of course.
You know, so it's just one of those things that, you know, and Cold Coffee, he got his honestly. He drank cold coffee, which to me made no sense. I'm like, who in the world drinks cold coffee, baby? You know, he wasn't looking. He would come in the room. The coffee was sitting there all morning or all day. He just poured a cup and drank it like it was hot. That's where he got that name from.
That is awesome. Peeling back the curtains a little bit, man. I love it. Well, Bert, I got to ask you, man. I know that even though you're not following the UFC anymore, I'm sure you pay attention to a little bit. And with this story, and I'm talking about John Jones, I don't think there's any way you could stay away from it. Now, I don't want to ask you to tell any stories that don't need to be told or anything like that, but I'm just curious. I mean, your interactions, I think the biggest question right now that everybody's trying to get is just what's going through John Jones' mind. What's happening? Why is this guy that's such an incredible athlete and such a great fighter, why is he having all these problems right now? And I just wanted to ask you. I mean, you may not have any answer at all, but I just wonder, with all the time that you had with him and interactions you had with him, did you ever see anything in him that gave you pause or concern that you thought, man, this kid might have some serious problems someday?
You know, let me say this. And another reason, you know, when I work with the guys and I work close and I try to be that buffer between them and the promoter and the media, everybody wants to be a star. Everybody wants to be a celebrity when you become a professional, anything, athlete, entertainer. Everybody wants that, but everybody can't handle that. Mm. And not only can everybody not handle it, but it's tough. Because it is so demanding, and it takes so much. You know, when you get to a certain celebrity status, there's no privacy. There is no downtime. There is no me time. You can't hardly eat in the restaurants. You can't get up. You know, and those kind of things, I can tell you, for anyone, is life-changing. And what it does and what happens is that you find guys that have to live that life and live that lifestyle for so long that when they get an opportunity with me time or downtime, it's whatever comes to their mind, whatever they might have a chance to do that maybe they used to or they didn't. It's just it's their downtime. It's me time. I'm not condoning anything like that, but I've seen it with guys who started in a position, who started on a professional level, became mega stars. You know, when they became stars, it runs you into a wall, baby. Yep. It is not something everybody can handle. Now, is there something wrong with that young man? I can't honestly say that, but I can tell you at a very young age, he became a superstar. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that demands a lot. You know, even with myself, everybody knows I drink Grand Marnier and Heineken. But, you know, the majority of the time, that stuff is in my room. I go to eat, I eat in my room, you know, because it's hard to get downtime or personal time. And it's one of those things where you're moving so fast and it's so much demanding. And it, you know, it's like that with a lot and the majority of the young athletes today. When they get that fame, you know, the world becomes a whole different place, a whole different platform.
Yep. Yeah.
And the scrutiny. The scrutiny is unbelievable. You know, it's unbelievable. That may not be an answer to why, and I'm not trying to answer why, but I do know that when that stuff comes to you, sometimes everybody's not prepared to handle that territory.
And
the way they handle it is not to everybody's liking.
I agree. I mean, I think what you're saying is all true, because what I've tried to convey to people is every interaction I've had with John Jones, I don't have a problem with him. I know he gets a lot of hate. I've always found him to be a pretty good young man. I mean, obviously we've seen him grow up over the past few years. I mean, he kind of became an adult in front of our eyes. He certainly became a superstar in front of our eyes. And, you know, every now and then he may say something that you look at him a little funny and say, you know, that was kind of weird. But at the same time,
right,
I mean, he got young and rich and famous and made a living beating up, MMA legends. And but I guess
real quick.
Yeah, and I guess I just say all of that to say that I think what you're saying is true. I don't think he's a bad human being. I think he's making some really bad choices right now.
Yeah.
And I hope he gets some help. I hope he gets some help.
And I'm sure that you know, the one thing is that when you make mistakes and make decisions, you know, when you plan something, you can change it. You can change your plans. You can redirect your plans, and you can plan not to do it. When you make a decision, you can't change it. You can't redirect it. Most of the time, decisions are spontaneous. You know, they're just things that happen and things that, and for the most part, when you make those decisions, you get caught up in them. You can't take that back, and you can't redirect that. You know, the fighters, every one of them, I never chased fighters for the media, so to speak.
Right.
What they gave to me and what they gave to you guys and everybody else was totally different. I had people come to me and say, oh, this person's a jackass. I don't want to do this, and I don't want. But I'd pick that phone up, and I'd call them in the middle of the night. They'd come and meet me wherever. Everybody gives everybody something different. Everybody reacts to others differently. I never had a problem with any fighters or any camp members. But you know what? Everybody else would say how difficult this person was, and this person didn't want to listen, and that person didn't want to listen. But it happens. Things get out of hand. And, you know, there's always time to pull it in. There's always time to redirect it. Always.
It's true. Hopefully he can do it. Hopefully this will be the wake-up call. Well, Bert, man, you've been very gracious with your time, man. We really appreciate it.
Always.
The big thing we want to say is obviously next Friday, May the 8th, look for Mr. Bert Watts on Access TV, RFA versus Legacy in Tunica, Mississippi. A cool little co-promotion that these two organizations are doing and crowning champions between the two of them. I think it's going to be a really fun night, and I think having Bert Watts and the babysitter to the up-and-coming stars is going to make it even better. So, Bert, any last messages, thoughts, anything like that? People that are wondering about you, they're worried about you, man. What do you want people to know about Bert Watson right now?
You know, I appreciate all the words, all the thoughts. You know, and anybody wants to know how to do it right, baby, I'm here. That's what I want to do. I want to do it for you. I want to do it with you. You know, like I said, I don't want to do 40, 50 shows a year, but I love teaching others how to do that. Holla at a brother, baby.
Perfect.
I love it.
Love it. I will just cut it right there, man. That was good. Bert, man, that was awesome, brother. We really, really appreciate it.
Now, man. Jay Morgan, CC, my man. Anytime y'all need something, you holla at me.
That was the one and only Mr. Bert Watson, of course, babysitter to the stars. I think even though he's no longer part of the UFC, I think at this point he's always going to be a part of UFC lore, a part of the history, part of the fabric of the company,
yep.
You know?
I agree.
We're hoping we get more of that, right? I know that you've had some conversations with Bert. And,
yeah.
And I guess first, before you say that, I mean, you and Bert have a little bit of a friendship. You guys have kind of developed a relationship over the years.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, you know, when it started, that very first event I ever worked, you know, for the UFC, you know, walking into the office and sitting there by myself, nobody else is in there, and I'm starting to see this empty table. I'm like, well, I'm just going to start setting up here. And if anybody has worked with Bert, Bert's very particular about the desks in the room, who can use what or whatever, you know.
That's one way to put it.
And, you know, for him to walk in the room, I think at the time my back was to him, you know, and I'm setting the stuff up, and I kind of glance out of the side of my head, you know, my side of my eyes. I see somebody standing there. I'm like, okay, whatever, you know, I'm not going to really say anything, you know. And then I can tell that he's being patient, you know, and he wants to just be like, all right, who the hell is this guy in here? You know, I start set up, and finally he's like, baby, you in the right spot or something along those lines. I'm like, yeah, I'm the new guy, you know, I'm one of the new guys. He's like, oh, okay. Okay, I got you, you know, let me know if you need anything. But he still kind of had that eye to where he's like, you know, I'm not quite sure about you, you know, because Bert, I think he interacts and sees so many people, you know, especially with the media. You never know what somebody is going to need. I think he had that, he was, it was warranted to probably be on guard of who's this guy in here. And we've certainly came a long way from then, you know, from when here I am trying to justify why I'm able to be in the room to, you know, to a point where, you know, yeah, I speak with Bert frequently, you know. And, you know, it's amazing. You know, he's been there. He was there with me when through my whole time when I worked for the UFC, and we stayed in contact after. And, you know, I like to think that, you know, that hopefully this will a friendship that keeps on going. So it's nice. You know, I bounce ideas off of him. He bounces ideas off of that. He keeps me in check, you know, and keeps me focused, you know, and, you know, and yeah, he's a good guy to have in your corner. So
and it was cool that he shared the story of how you got your cold coffee nickname.
Yes, I thought he'd go a little crazier in depth, but he kept it nice.
Well,
and clean,
he left out a few details, yeah. But that's all right. It's enough for people to know right now. Yeah, maybe they can get further details down the road.
You know, and
you meet up with the MMA Roadshow on the road, and you get the rest of the details.
there it is. And it was, and you put in a good thing. Yeah, when you got your nickname, it felt like something. And he knows how I felt, you know, after I got that, and I feel bad I didn't convey it when we just spoke, but he knows that it definitely meant something, you know. And it's funny, like half the crews in the other countries for the longest time didn't even know my real name. They just called me Cold Coffee. And so that's why, you know, I chose to stick it in honor of Bert and in honor of all the good times with the UFC and stuff. You know, I decided that Cold Coffee would be the great moniker to keep for the
MMA awesome.
Roadshow.
It's funny. One of my proudest moments was actually silencing Bert Watson completely. I actually got him completely speechless, which doesn't happen very often. This was in Tokyo, Japan, and his Cold Coffee can attest, in Tokyo, Japan, we do enjoy a sake or two at nighttime. But the next morning, and this is important because I probably was a little hungover. I wouldn't have said that. Maybe a little still feeling the night before. But I'm sitting in the media room, just kind of getting my day started, doing some work. And, you know, Bert Watson walks in the door, and he starts peering around. He's, you know, shifting his head left to right. He's looking. He's looking under tables. He's looking around. I mean, he's obviously – He's in search of something. And I'm like, Bert, man, what's up? And he's like, I'm just looking for a random box. And immediately I just said, aren't we all? and Bert just it lifted a finger in the air and pointed at me. But words just wouldn't come out. He was like, it just walked right out. So.
I love it.
That was the best. But we really appreciate Bert Watson taking the time. It's great to see him back in the sport.
Yes.
And, again, hopefully we'll see him more times on the MMA Roadshow. Yes. And he can tell us some further stories.
There's so many stories we got to get out of him, especially because even Japan, you know. I just want to elaborate because there's so many good stories. I don't know if people know that Bert is deathly afraid of heights, and he kind of mentioned it in his interview a little bit. And speaking of Japan, just because I'll leave you this little tidbit of the fun times with Bert. Bert doesn't like heights, and the office that we shared was like on the 40-something floor, whatever
right.
The highest floors, but it's all windows. And Bert made everybody have to shut all the windows because he couldn't go into the office to even work. He'd get so mad if he opened up any of the blinds so you could see outside, because we're literally so far up. It was an incredible, incredible view, you know. But that was Bert, and he'll elaborate more when we get him on. We'll get him telling some more neat little stories.
He's definitely
like that,
afraid of heights. Like,
oh, boy.
Gets like in elevators. Like if you have a high elevator with glass or whatever, like he will literally like sit down. Or
oh yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's pretty intense. But he had a good gig there for a while. He parlayed that into his what do you call it? First class tickets. Because he'd always say, he's like, baby, you know, because I could pull the blinds down, and it's got maybe that little wall I could tuck in there, and I can get nice and, you know, sheltered. I'm like, Bert, they can pull the blinds down in all the other rows, too.
man.
I was like, maybe the first class ones, they pull down better. I don't know.
That's time darker. For me to tell MMA Junkie. I'm afraid of heights. I'm afraid of heights.
Well, see, he's got all kinds of wisdom.
I appreciate everybody listening. It's been fun. Obviously, this has been episode number 5. It's been great to build this and have fun. And I promise you, we will get back out on the road for the MMA Roadshow in May. we're doing figured this out the other day. This is pretty cool. Didn't realize it until I was kind of, you know, booking my month. Look at it. 4 weeks, 4 fights, 4 different continents.
Wow.
So that's pretty nuts, man.
That's
we'll hit up.
Doesn't get much more roadshow than that.
Yeah, we'll hit up Asia, Australia, North and South America in the course of 4 weeks. So that'll be busy. So Anyway, MMA Roadshow. Listen, if you're not following us on Instagram, do that. The MMA Roadshow on Instagram. We do our best to document what we're doing at the UFC events. Certainly, you'll get to see some MMA and then maybe try to give you a little bit of culture as well. See a little bit of the sights if we see something particularly beautiful. The MMAroadshow.com is where you can direct and download the show. And, of course, on iTunes, if you're listening to it there, do us a favor. Subscribe to it. Review it. Help us grow it. Help us blow it up, and because we're having a fun time doing it. We'd love to keep doing it and keep making it as big as possible. So, in the meantime, until we get back on the road, this has been John Morgan in Cold Coffee in beautiful Las Vegas. The sun is setting. The cold beer is going down good, and I think we're going to close up shop and enjoy a few more of these frosty beverages.
I love it.
Appreciate you listening, guys. Thank you.